Welcome to the New York Outdoor News Great Northeast Podcast. Every 2 weeks, we explore news and issues affecting hunters, anglers, and conservation across the northeastern United States. If you enjoy the content here, be sure to subscribe to our print or digital versions by calling 800-535-5191 or visit our website at outdoornews.com. Now, here's your host and a man who claims he's immune to buck fever, New York Outdoor News editor Dan Ladd.
This episode of the Great Northeast Podcast is brought to you by the Family Forest Carbon Program, a collaborative initiative created by two nonprofit organizations, the American Forest Foundation and the Nature Conservancy, assisting landowners in improving the health of their land with long-term sustainable forest management practices while providing guaranteed annual income. Learn more at familyforestcarbon.org. Welcome to the Great Northeast Podcast. I'm Dan Ladd, your host, editor of New York Outdoor News. Always happy to be along and happy to have you along on what is the 97th episode of this podcast. Yes, we are heading for episode 100. Really looking forward to that and want to thank everyone who has been with us here for the 4 years we've been doing this every 2 weeks. We have a lot of fun with it. We hope you find it engaging. We try to bring some interesting guests on and touch on some important topics here and there and have a little fun along the way as well. We are approaching the Memorial Day holiday, one of the busiest weekends of the year, the first big warm weather recreational weekend of the year. But it's been kind of scary out there. Here in New York, we've had not one but three drownings already involving small boats and potentially people not wearing life vests. The water's cold, folks. I know we had a warm up here recently with temperatures in the 90s, but don't let that fool you. It's been a cold spring and those water temperatures are pretty cold. So be careful out there this weekend. We know there's going to be a lot of people on the lakes, even though it might not be the most summer-like weekend. People will be getting out, doing some fishing, spending some time on the water, I'm sure. So make the most of it, but please be safe. It is still turkey season. We're winding things down here across many of the Northeast states. The turkey season usually ends right around the end of May here in New York. That is May 31st, of course. And man, I've had a really strange turkey season. I've been lucky. I've engaged with a lot of birds, but I've yet to pull the trigger. Been seeing a lot of jakes, especially early on, and may come to regret the fact that I did not take a jake. But I've had a chance to engage with some good gobblers. I just haven't been able to pull them away from hens. In one case, I've got two good gobblers, three jakes, and four or five hens all running in a group, and they will not separate. I am seeing some evidence that might start happening, and I hope I get a chance to get after those gobblers before the season ends. And a lot of people say about the late season that you go late in the day. They really like the late season. For me, it's just never worked out. I've never done well late in the season, but I'm willing to see how it plays out this year. I don't have much of a choice. Earlier this spring, the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation came out with four proposals designed to get deer hunters to take more antlerless deer. Recently, at the New York State Outdoor Writers Association's annual spring conference, we had a meeting with some folks from DEC that included the commissioner, Amanda Lefton, but also Brendan Querian. He is the big game unit leader, and he had a whole lot to say about these proposals, did a nice job on a presentation and answered some questions. And we've got some sound bites from that when we come back right after this.
Are you an avid angler searching for the latest fishing news and tips? It's time to check out OutdoorNews.com. Get ready to reel in the freshest updates and expert advice from top anglers. Plus, you'll have access to the most up-to-date fishing reports, lake maps, lake reports, and more. Don't let the big one get away. Join OutdoorNews.com and reel in a world of fishing knowledge and expertise. Join today, OutdoorNews.com. Your passion, your news, your fishing journey.
Welcome back to the Great Northeast Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Ladd, editor of New York Outdoor News. And as promised, we've got Brendan Querian here. He is the big game unit leader for the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation. And he's been knee deep in the recently proposed antlerless deer regulations for, well, we don't know if they're going to be enacted this year or not, but he sat down again with the New York State Outdoor Writers Association, and what we've got is some sound bites from that. This first segment, you're going to get an introduction from him, who he is, a little bit of his background, and even how a not-so-famous writer influenced him, but mainly he's going to jump into the nuts and bolts of these proposals. Here's Brendan Querian, New York State Department of Environmental Conservation, Big Game Unit Leader.
So my background, I grew up in Schoharie County, just across the river here, into a family that didn't hunt. Neither of my parents hunted, and it was really my mom in her wisdom who saw that I had taken up an interest in the outdoors that encouraged my uncle to serve as a mentor for me. And so he took me out turkey hunting for the first time when I was 12 years old. And that led to a lifelong passion for hunting, primarily deer hunting and turkey hunting. So when I graduated from high school, I wanted to pursue wildlife management. I got my bachelor's degree at SUNY Cobleskill. After graduating, I moved up to the Adirondacks, where I worked for the Nature Conservancy for 10 years on invasive species management issues for the Nature Conservancy. That's where I met Commissioner Lefton and Dan Ladd. Dan Ladd's book, Deer Hunting in the Adirondacks, was one of the first books that I read when I was in the Adirondacks learning how to deer hunt in one of the most challenging places to deer hunt in the Northeast. And it's because of Dan that I had some success up there and continue to have some success up there. So thanks for contributing to my hunting adventures.
My wife wrote that book. So
after working for the Nature Conservancy for 10 years, I really wanted to get back into wildlife management, deer management in particular. And so I pursued a graduate degree at Cornell University studying deer management. And after receiving that degree, I was hired as DEC's deer biologist in Region 3 in 2021, was then promoted to the big game coordinating biologist out of central office in 2023. And then most recently was promoted into the role of big game unit leader this past year. And so just want to demonstrate that I am testament to what can happen when you introduce a young person to hunting. It can change the trajectory of their entire life in a very positive and meaningful way, as it did for me. Sorry, I get a little emotional when I talk about that. But what I want to talk about today is primarily deer management related. I'm an avid deer hunter. Me and my family take about 3 or 4 deer per year, and it's the primary source of protein for my family. I no longer purchase beef. I use a little bit of pork in the grind that I use to make sausage and burger from venison, and I eat a little bit of chicken throughout the year, but my primary source of food is venison, or meat is venison. Just want to make that clear. I can honestly say that we are in or entering some of the best deer hunting that has ever been had in New York State. And there are many reasons for that. As you all know, deer populations nearly were extirpated at the end of the 1800s, early 1900s in New York State. There were just remnant populations of deer in the Adirondacks and Catskills, and it was really hunters who came together, organized, and protected those deer populations so that they could expand and repopulate the rest of the state. That has been tremendously successful. We now have the highest deer population that New York has likely ever experienced, at close to 1.6 million deer across the entire state. The other thing that has changed over that period of time is the buck age structure. I'm looking at this poster over here of the age classes of bucks from QDMA. In the 1990s, 70% of our harvest were the yearling age class. 20% were the 2.5-year-old age class, and 10% were the 3.5-year-old age class. In 2025, that has completely reversed. This year, this past year, close to 30% were 3.5 years or older. 40% were 2.5-year-olds or older, and only 30% were yearlings. So this is really, again, testament to the conservation efforts of hunters and wanting to have more opportunities to harvest bucks that produce more meat, but also have larger antlers. So this is really exciting. We value seeing this change in our deer population, and many hunters are experiencing some of the best buck hunting that they've ever had throughout the state. And this actually puts New York above Pennsylvania's age structure and comparable to Ohio's age structure. And here's the most important part of it. We haven't had to do any statewide regulations to force hunters to make that change. They have done it voluntarily through our Let Young Bucks Go and Watch Them Grow education outreach campaign. And so moving forward, we may even need to reconsider whether APRs in the Catskills here are even necessary if those trends continue. Hunters are just willing to do it themselves because they see the value of that opportunity. The other thing I want to mention is that we've been successful in keeping New York free of chronic wasting disease. Many states are dealing with this on an ongoing basis and have been unsuccessful in preventing CWD from entering their wild deer herd. In 2005, we had an outbreak of chronic wasting disease in Oneida County, and because of the quick response from DEC and Department of Ag and Markets, we were able to eradicate that outbreak. We are still the only state that has been able to do that successfully. In 2024, we had another outbreak of CWD that was detected in a captive deer facility in Herkimer County, and again, after quick response by both DEC and Ag and Markets, we still have not found CWD in New York's wild deer herd. We're still looking in that area, and we have enhanced surveillance around that area that's ongoing, but so far we have not found it in the wild deer herd. The other thing that I want to mention that's really exciting is these changes that the legislature is making to the environmental conservation law. Commissioner Lefton spoke about the changes to the crossbow law that expands opportunity for hunters to use crossbows during the entire bow hunting season. And we're seeing hunters embrace this. This past season, we saw a major increase in the harvest of deer that were taken with crossbows. So last year, about 33% of the archery take was with vertical or with a crossbow. This year was 51%. So that's great to see. The other thing that I think is really important is that these are hunters that may have been limited by only being able to use a vertical bow. If we look at the age distribution of those hunters that are using a crossbow, they are significantly older than those that take deer with a vertical bow. And this to me means that these hunters may have, you know, the lack of dexterity or no longer the strength to use a vertical bow, and this crossbow opportunity is now keeping them in the game. It's allowing them to continue to hunt for deer when they may have not been able to because of prior laws.
There's a great program available for youth who love to hunt and fish. It's called the Outdoor News Junior Pro Team, and any youth 18 or under can join for free at jrproteam.com. JPT program showcases useful videos and tips to help encourage the next generation to become stronger anglers and hunters. It's a platform to celebrate and inspire those outdoor loving youth. Check out the photos of Outdoor News Junior Pro Team members on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, and YouTube, and visit our jrproteam.com for more information.
I'm here primarily to talk about deer, but I also want to briefly mention our bear management. Bear hunting opportunities are also some of the best they've ever been in New York. Similar to New York, we have remnant populations of bear in both the Adirondacks and Catskills that are continuing to expand across New York State. We're seeing more and more wildlife management units where bears are being harvested. And this past year, we actually broke the record for the number of bears that were harvested in the Southern Zone ever, going back to 1970. So again, tremendous opportunities for big game hunting in New York that hunters are taking advantage of. But there are challenges that we're facing. There are two sides to this coin. As deer populations expand, they can also start to exceed social and ecological carrying capacity. We are seeing societal impacts from deer populations. I'll mention a few of them. Deer vehicle collisions. The New York State Department of Transportation estimates that there's about 60,000 to 70,000 deer vehicle collisions happening in New York each year. Each one of those costs New Yorkers about $4,000 per accident. You can do the math on what that comes up to. A more recent study found that deer are responsible for the deaths of about 440 Americans each year, making deer the deadliest species of wildlife in America. I'm here to say we do not talk to the car insurance industry when we make our deer management decisions. I have never spoken to anyone from the car insurance industry or been contacted by them, but we do reference data, and that data influences our decision making. So public concern in particular on this is rising, and that is certainly in the back of our minds when we think about deer management in the future. There's also deer damage happening across New York State. 2025 was the year that we issued the most deer damage permits ever since DEC began tracking. It's very difficult to quantify the economic impact that deer are having to farmers, gardeners, municipalities, you name it, but it's likely in the hundreds of millions of dollars each year. I also want to mention tick-borne diseases. The Department of Health put out their 2005 tick-borne disease surveillance report, and unsurprisingly, cases of Lyme disease, anaplasmosis, and babesiosis are continuing to rise throughout New York State. This has affected my own family. My mom contracted Lyme disease several years ago. She continues to experience chronic impacts of that. Even myself and my family, when we go out into the woods and recreate in our own backyard, it is routine practice now that when we come back into the house, we have to check ourselves for ticks, and we often find them. Luckily, none of us have contracted one of these diseases, but it's certainly not something I had to worry about when I was a kid, and it's becoming an increasing problem. Deer are not the only driver of that change, but they are certainly a contributor to that problem. I also want to mention the ecological impacts that deer can have on our forests. So in 2022, TNC found that an estimated 50% of New York's forests do not have sufficient regeneration to fully recover after a disturbance event, and that deer were the most significant driver of that lack of forest regeneration. This fundamentally changes our forests. When deer selectively browse those species they prefer, our young trees and forbs, they can shift the forest to other states, either one that does not have much in the understory or one that can be dominated by species that deer don't eat. Things like invasive species, multiflora rose, buckthorn, honeysuckle, Japanese barberry. If you go out and look in the forest here in Columbia County, this is what you see in many cases. And obviously when you're changing the bottom of the food chain in a forest, it has ramifications up the food web. This is affecting bird species, small mammals, insects, and invertebrates throughout the entire forest system. And obviously, this compromises the ability to provide benefits for us as well. Things like carbon sequestration, things like clean water, clean air. So deer have to be part of the management conversation when we're thinking about how forests will provide conservation benefit into the future. I also want to talk about some of the biological impacts that deer are experiencing as a result of being too high in density in certain areas. So in 2021, I had been on the job 2 weeks, and the lower Hudson Valley experienced one of the most severe outbreaks of epizootic hemorrhagic disease that the state has ever experienced. I remember being on the phone with hundreds of landowners who were seeing deer die in their ponds, in their pools, under their porches, everywhere, and not knowing what to do about it, being extremely concerned and wanting DEC to do something about it. This is a situation where climate change is resulting in a new disease to spread into New York, where our deer population is largely naive to the virus, and because our deer densities are so high in particular areas, when it is introduced, it spreads very quickly. And that's exactly what we saw in 2021 and 2020. This shouldn't be a surprise to us. We just lived through this with the COVID pandemic, right? When you have many individuals congregated in one particular area and a disease hits, It can spread quickly throughout the entire population and have severe impacts. And those areas that were most heavily affected in those years still haven't fully recovered. So it can really result in major challenges for hunters for a prolonged period of time. My key message is that if those deer populations were at a lower level, a lower density, likely EHD would not have had such a significant impact. The other thing that's concerning is that we are seeing some evidence that the deer health and condition of our population is declining. So I mentioned earlier that we know the age structure of the deer population. That's because we go out and actually check, physically look at about 12,000 to 14,000 deer harvested by hunters each year. All of our regional staff participate in what we call this deer check effort each year. So one of the things that we're collecting is age information on each of those deer. Another piece of data that we collect is something called antler beam diameter. So if you refer to this buck, this mounted buck up here, it's basically the diameter of the base of the antler on either side. And what that serves as is an indicator of that deer's health or condition. If we see increasing trends in antler beam diameter, it's an indication that that deer has excess nutrients that it can dedicate to antler growth. If we see declines, it's an indication that there's not enough food to go around in that deer population, and they are experiencing some type of nutrient limitation or nutrient stress. As of 2025, we're seeing more and more areas of the state with declining trends in antler beam diameter. So ironically, even though the age structure of our buck population is improving, their antlers are actually getting smaller in certain areas of the state. And that's because there are too many deer on the landscape for them to have sufficient nutrients to produce great antler quality. So, what are we going to do about it? This is why we're proposing these changes to increase harvest of antlerless deer across the landscape. The question for me is, can we restore some kind of balance? And please let me know if I'm going too long. Someone, I don't want to like use up our entire time here. But certainly there are other management challenges that are at play. We have fewer hunters than we did before. Less land access than we did before for hunters to utilize. Severe winters that helped keep deer populations in check in areas of the Adirondacks and Catskills are becoming less frequent. But are there other things we can try to do to improve the situation while still making sure that the hunting heritage in New York remains strong? Whenever I think about how best to proceed in this type of paradigm, I remember this quote from Alva Leopold, one of the founding fathers of modern wildlife management. He said, "A thing is right when it tends to preserve the integrity, stability, and beauty of the biotic community. It is wrong when it tends to do otherwise." So for me, I really want to see hunters embrace harvest of antlerless deer in particular so that we can address these challenges that we're facing while also making sure that our deer herd remains strong and hunting remains an important aspect of conservation in New York. But here's the problem. Many hunters don't harvest antlerless deer. So throughout the early 2000s, we were consistently harvesting more antlerless deer than antlered deer. Then in around 2015 or so, something changed. Since then, there's only been 2 years where more antlerless deer were harvested than antlered deer. And why do I care about antlerless deer so much? Let me clarify that to start. Antlerless deer, or female deer, are the component of the deer population that drives population growth. So many hunters feel like my role is to really improve buck age structure or buck hunting opportunities. In reality, that plays a very minor component of my role. My role is to manage the entire deer population, and we do that by adjusting the harvest of antlerless deer. If insufficient levels of antlerless deer are being harvested, that creates management challenges like the ones that I mentioned earlier. And when we review the data, it's very clear why this isn't happening. During the 25 deer season, I could probably count on one hand the number of days where more antlerless deer were being reported by hunters than antlered deer. When we survey deer hunters, around 20% of them say that they harvested at least one antlerless deer, but 60% of them say that they passed up an opportunity to harvest an antlerless deer. So it's very clear that hunters have shifted their focus primarily to buck hunting at the cost, potentially, of effective deer management and management of the herd. So this is the background context by which we are now proposing these regulations that would increase harvest of antlerless deer across the state. I believe most of you have seen them already, so I'm not going to go into the details of what they're intended to do. But in summary, we're proposing that they do three things: remove barriers for hunters to access antlerless deer tags, expand opportunities for hunters to harvest antlerless deer, and create an incentive that would essentially encourage hunters to harvest antlerless deer in order to get a second antlered deer tag. The other thing I want to mention is this social license for hunting. We know that the public is largely supportive of hunting when it happens for food and when it happens for population management. They're less supportive of hunting if it happens for sport and trophy hunting alone. That should be extremely concerning to us. How can we expect the public to open their lands to hunting, open their lands for outdoor recreation, and support deer hunting if we ourselves as hunters are not harvesting antlerless deer and managing the deer population in an effective way? So in closing, I want to thank you all for the opportunity to come and speak today. I'm really excited about some of the things that we're hoping to do with the proposed regulations. I want to hear your feedback. The public comment period for that closes on May 17th. We then are going to proceed with a briefing with the commissioner and decide what we're going to actually adopt moving forward. I encourage you all to comment on them by that May 17th deadline, and encourage others to do so as well. I think with Commissioner Lefton's leadership and the support of the sportsman's community, we can make great strides in deer management, both to ensure that the positive trends that we are seeing continue, while also more effectively managing the deer herd and addressing those challenges that I mentioned earlier. So thank you all.
Thanks.
That was Brendan Querian, Big Game Unit Leader for the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation, his presentation to the New York State Outdoor Writers Association recently. And of course, he fielded some questions, and we're going to come back with those right after this.
Your land is your legacy, but keeping it healthy and thriving means caring for it now and in the future. The Family Forest Carbon Program can help you do right by your land, with guaranteed income, help developing a forest management plan, and advice from experts. If you own 30 acres or more of forest land in Vermont, Massachusetts, or New York, you may be eligible to enroll in the Family Forest Carbon Program. Visit familyforestcarbon.org and enroll today.
Welcome back to the Great Northeast Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Ladd, editor of New York Outdoor News, and I want to apologize a little bit ahead of time for this next segment. When we recorded the audio for this, we were a little bit further away from Brendan when he answered the question. So we're beefing it up a little bit. We hope you'll understand that. But the topics that he covered and the questions that were asked were pretty interesting. And the first one has to do with the youth hunting tag.
So last year we made a change where any youth hunter that only had their regular season deer tag and used it during that youth season and didn't have access to DMPs would receive a replacement deer tag that could be used during a regular season. If they harvested an antlered deer during a youth hunt, that replacement tag would be for an antlerless deer. If they used it on an antlerless deer during a youth hunt, that replacement tag is for an antlered deer. So that is continuing.
The next question that came Brendan's way had to do with transferring deer management permits, also known as doe permits or antlerless deer permits.
So far, it is still limited to two, but that is part of our proposed regulation change for 2026 or 2027. It would basically propose that
DMPs could be transferred unlimited to a limited extent. If you had a hunter that had several DMPs and you didn't have any, they could transfer all of them to you.
Next, Brenda discussed the public comments that came from hunters, something like 900 of them at the time, and we know that number grew.
Now we've received close to 900 comments so far. I truly do read every single one of them, even though it takes a long time. I want to make sure that I'm hearing from every single person that cares about this issue. So I want to start there. This conception that we don't care about public comment or that it doesn't have any influence on what we do is not true. I certainly read through everything and take it into consideration. And it really runs the gamut as far as folks who are supportive or concerned. For conservation organizations, NGOs, many of them are very supportive because they are experiencing the deer impacts that I mentioned earlier. Hunters have expressed concerns on a variety of fronts. So for example, some are concerned that there could be overharvest of the deer population in particular areas. We haven't seen any evidence that that would be the case. We have been increasing season lengths and DMP availability in many areas of the state for the past decade, and it has not resulted in any form of overharvest. There are some concerns about potential for fraud under the earn a second buck system, where a hunter could report a fake doe to get that second antler deer tag. We're aware of that potential. Many states that have also implemented earn a second buck systems are not seeing the level of fraud that I think hunters anticipate. They're not seeing it at a level that it would affect their deer management. That being said, we still want to make sure that that fraud, when it does occur, can be addressed. And so we're considering incorporating additional ways to verify or validate that antlerless harvest that would have to occur before receiving that second antler deer tag. So those are probably a couple of the biggest concerns that we're hearing. Another one is in relation to buck age structure. Obviously, we're seeing these improvements over time, and no one wants to see that go away. There's some concern that having the opportunity to harvest a second buck during the regular season could change that trajectory. But here's some of the data on that. Less than 2% of our hunters take two antler deer, two bucks currently. Under the new system, they would have to harvest three deer. First, they would have to harvest a buck. They would have to harvest an antlerless deer to get that second antler deer tag, and then they would have to harvest a second antler deer. That is less than 2% of our hunters that are doing that currently. So can we expect some increase in buck harvest under the proposed regs? Yes. Is it going to have a major impact on the buck population and reduce buck age structure? I doubt it. Again, hunters are the ones voluntarily doing this to improve our buck age structure. Even with a second tag in hand, I doubt many of them are going to just all of a sudden start shooting yearlings instead. So, yes, we're hearing these concerns. We're comparing it against the data and doing our best to make sure that we can address those concerns.
And finally, Brendan fielded a few questions on antler restrictions in New York regarding the past, present, and future.
So antler point restrictions basically require that bucks have a minimum number of points in order to be harvested. Back when DEC was considering changes to buck management, there was interest in the Catskills in particular to establish an APR program. That program still exists today. Simultaneous to that, we implemented this education outreach campaign, the Let Young Bucks Go and Watch Them Grow campaign, to compare whether voluntary restraint and hunter choice would be sufficient to improve the buck age structure before expanding APRs. And indeed it has. That voluntary restraint has been extremely effective, and we expect those trends to continue. So in the future, it will beg the question of whether mandatory APRs are still necessary in those areas of the Catskills, or whether hunters are just going to be willing to do this themselves to improve our buck age structure and continue to monitor.
That's going to do it for this edition of the Great Northeast Podcast. We hope you enjoyed that. And once again, now we apologize for the lesser audio quality for the third segment compared to the other two. Just a question of microphone placement during those interviews. But we hope you took something from that, found it informative. And we also hope that you got your public comments in regarding these proposals if you are a New York deer hunter. Once again, for the Great Northeast Podcast, I'm Dan Land, hoping you got a big gobbler coming your way and a big fish in your net. Until the next time.
Missed a past episode of the New York Outdoor News Great Northeast Podcast? You can find previous programs at outdoornews.com or via your favorite podcast streaming platform. And for the rest of the story on the topics we cover on this program, get yourself a subscription to Outdoor News. Simply call 800-535-5191 or visit us at outdoornews.com. And don't forget to join us again here in 2 weeks to talk everything out of doors. Thanks for listening to the New York Outdoor News Great Northeast Podcast.